Blog Talk Radio.
It's the Gridiron Stud Show and a promo that's got the flow. Football knowledge from toe to toe with Amo, Calamino, and the other host. You already know Chad Wilson brings you the show. Dial us up, give us a call. We're waiting here to talk some ball. 347-633-9365 is the number to call. So don't sit around, no time to stall. Giving you football from wall to wall. And now we give you our two hosts, Amo and Chad, with your breakfast toast.
The Breakfast Toast is here. It is a Tuesday. It is already January 26th of 2016. That just sounds crazy. Nevertheless, we're here, Chad Wilson, Amo Calamino, and is, as always on Tuesday, it's Straight Talk with Warren Sapp. He will be joining us here in about 15 minutes on the Gridiron Stud Show to talk about what went down this weekend in both the AFC and NFC Championship games and maybe a little bit of a preview of the Super Bowl 50, Amo. You've seen all the Super Bowls, right?
No, I missed the first couple. Come on, man. I'm not that old, jeepers. The first Super Bowl I remember, I'm trying to think here, that I have a decent recollection of is probably the Super Bowl after the 1974 season where the Steelers and Vikings played. I remember those games used to be played in the middle of the afternoon. I believe that one was played, I want to say, in the old Tulane Stadium down in New Orleans, but I'm not 100% on that, and I just remember it being crappy. It was raining. I was about to be 7 years old that year because it was in January 75, so I was 6 and a half or whatever, and I have a pretty decent memory of that game.
Yeah, the first Super Bowl I remember was one of full of heartache because, you know, I was a Los Angeles Rams fan, so it was 1979 Super Bowl. I don't know which Super Bowl that is, but it involved the Los Angeles Rams and the Pittsburgh Steelers. I was, man,
Super Bowl 14. That was 14,
Super
buddy.
Super Bowl 14 is what that was?
Yes.
Way to come through with that information. But the 78 Super Bowl, yes, I was in the country, wasn't really paying much attention to that. I think at around that time, I was more a soccer fan. I'd just come back into the country from Trinidad, and so soccer was the thing down there, and that was what was foremost on my mind. Checking out the New York Cosmos. So any soccer fans out there, if there are any, you might remember the New York Cosmos that had Pele on the team. So that's the kind of stuff I was following. But by the time 78 turned to 79, I took on the, well, not the national pastime at the time, because football was not ahead of baseball at that time, as you can remember, but nevertheless,
let me give you this. Is this a scary good memory? I told you the first one I remembered. I just looked it up. It was Super Bowl IX, the Steelers-Vikings. Sure enough, it was in the old Tulane Stadium. And I was doing that off the top of my head, I swear my children. But it was. Listen to these statistics, and let's compare them to what they end up this year. About 56 million people watched that Super Bowl. And the cost of a 30-second commercial was $107,000. Now, we'll get those numbers after this one. Yeah, boy, do things change.
Yeah, I mean, not as wide of an audience. I'd like to get those numbers now as to how many people are watching it and how it exactly relates to what a 30-second spot is. That's a lot of money, though, back then, though, Amo, $107,000.
Oh, 1975. You're talking 40 years ago. Sure, 107 grand was a lot of. Hey, 107 grand is a lot of change now, but it was a real lot then.
I'd love to know if you can find that information, if it's available where you're looking, who the advertisers were back then. It'd just be interesting to know who had that kind of cheese and who really wanted to get out there to the audience at that time compared to who's trying to get out there now. But nevertheless, the Super Bowl was a big deal then, but it's a really huge deal now. It's an international event. It will bring in more people into the NFL's business, more people asking questions, more pressure on the NFL to look good, do things right, and not make a total mess of itself. We do believe that we have a good matchup between the Denver Broncos and the Carolina Panthers, but that always remains to be seen. Sometimes the pressure of the whole event can cause people to crack, as was the case for Peyton Manning last time he appeared in a Super Bowl. It started bad and just got uglier from there. A missed snap in the end zone resulted in a safety, and it just was all downhill for Peyton, who is looking for his swan song. Abel, do you believe that Peyton Manning would retire if he were to win this Super Bowl?
And I want to ask Sapp this, but I actually believe he will retire regardless of the result, because I think he will be retired, if that makes any sense. At some point, somebody tells you you can't
put... retire him? Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, I do. I just can't see... you know, listen, they're not winning these games. I'm not trying to... He did nothing Sunday to win that game for them. He didn't lose it, which I guess is part of playing in the playoffs. But the writing's on the wall in Denver. I think they don't want the mess that would be going forward next year with, hey, you know, as soon as he has a couple games where he's throwing those wounded ducks up and there's two or three picks, people are asking for Osweiler. I think they know they have to make a decision after this season. They got away with it in that last game against San Diego when they needed the home field advantage. They brought him in and the team responded with a great drive and kind of bailed out Kubiak from making what might have been a difficult decision. Had Osweiler went out and played well that game and Denver drilled San Diego, I mean, you might have Peyton Manning standing on the bench for these playoffs.
You know, I don't know where I am on that. I guess it would depend on how good they feel about Brock Osweiler. The truth of the matter is, when you know, Peyton was great, a great passer, a great thrower of the football all these years, and had problems winning Super Bowls. But at this point, it's all about his brain and relenting to what is, you know, the key to winning. And here he is in the Super Bowl. So do you get rid of him now if he's not wanting to retire, or do you take the brain and continue to rely on what it is that got you here, which is a great defense, a solid running game, and great decision-making by your quarterback?
Well, they've had some things break well for them. You know, guys like DeMarcus Ware, another favorite of mine, I mean, he's getting up there in age. I mean, I think the Broncos are going to understand that, you know, that formula may need to be tweaked a little bit. Not that that's not the formula to win. I'm just saying they may not have the same pieces going forward because of age. I just think at some point, the guy's 40. He's going to be 41 when next season starts. At some point, you have to realize that, yeah, they got away with it this year. But you're not going to win games consistently in this league the way it's set up, 20-18. I mean, and really, they did nothing in either game moving the football that makes you think that, you know, they can continue that formula. Even the game against the Steelers. The Steelers went in there as a wounded animal. You know, and really, they took Denver to the, you know, right down to the wire in that game. So, I don't know. I mean, I commend him for what he's done, because as you said, he bought into the formula. He's in the Super Bowl. That's the goal. But I think at some point, you know, Denver's going to move off him. And, you know, I think they like Osweiler. There's nothing not to like. I mean, the guy played this year, his first real taste of it. And he did pretty well for himself.
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess we got to get to the Super Bowl first. But that is going to be an interesting dynamic. What does Peyton Manning do after this? Is he a guy that's going to have a hard time calling it quits? He hasn't made any type of announcement. Is he the kind of guy that would need to make an announcement beforehand and do the whole farewell tour thing? Or is he a guy that could just hang it up? And would he be okay if he took a loss here in this Super Bowl just going out on that note? So either way,
Let me toss this out for you. Him and Osweiler had basically the same amount of attempts this year. And you can't say that statistics don't matter, because Osweiler won a lot of big football games for him this year. He beat the Patriots in Denver, which basically got them home field advantage. Manning threw 331 passes. Osweiler threw 275, okay? Manning completed just under 60% of his passes. Osweiler just under 62%. Osweiler was higher per attempt. Osweiler threw 10 TDs to 6 picks, Manning 9 to 17 interceptions. Manning had finished the year with a 68 quarterback rating, Osweiler 86. Now, obviously they've gotten to Manning in the playoffs, I get that, and the brain thing does matter, and they know they have a really good defense, so I get what they did playing to their strength. But those numbers that I just read for you for Manning over a 16-game season, you might not be in the playoffs.
Maybe, maybe not, Emil. I don't know. Well, but again, we'll just have to see how all this shakes out. I can make an argument for him being in there. I could probably argue, I could argue why those numbers are that way. We can do a lot of things there on that. So, but nevertheless, that's not the debate that we're going to have now. And again, if you're just now tuning in, Warren Sapp will join us here in about 5 minutes on the show. Let's slide off of the topic of football and run over to the NBA. Golden State, we talked a little bit yesterday about how good the San Antonio Spurs are and how they always have a legitimate shot of being the team out of the West, even with Golden State being as hot as they are. Last night, Emil, Golden State goes out and punishes them by 30 points. What to make of that 120-90 win for the Warriors over the Spurs?
It's hard to draw conclusions from a lot of regular season NBA games. They're going to play three more times. They'll play a couple times in San Antonio. I think, like you said yesterday, playoff basketball is just different. Obviously, both teams want to win when they step on the court, but I just don't think you can draw too much from when top teams play in the regular season. You got to see them go. They're going to go at it, hopefully, in a seven-game series. In the playoffs, and that'll be that. I think the best thing from yesterday's game was Popovich, where he got a little dig in on the Cavaliers. He made some comment after the game basically about the Cavalier coach being fired after a loss like this. I guess he basically said, hopefully they won't fire me.
You gotta love Popovich. You keep a straight face and crack a joke, so you gotta love that. But on the note of the Cleveland Cavaliers, congratulations to them. They won their first game under new coach Tyronn Lue. Who's the coach? Is it LeBron James? Tyronn Lue? Who is it? Who's coaching over there in Cleveland? No one has any idea. But nevertheless, that was nothing to be proud of.
Last night, they went to the wire with a horrendous Minnesota T-Wolves team.
Yes, they beat the mighty Minnesota 14-32 Timberwolves. Yesterday, I don't know. That thing's looking a little bit like a train wreck. But you know what? It is, like you said, the NBA. All they got to do is get their act together sometime in March, going into April, and everything will be just fine. I don't know how much of a challenge they're going to have in the East if they really get things rolling here, and that is the hope.
Well, I don't know much about Toronto, but, I mean, if you really take a look, Toronto has played well this year. We'll see what happens when they get to the playoffs. But the rest of that Eastern Conference, I mean, the back half of it, it's better than it usually is. None of the teams are under 500. Seeds 5-8 are all over 500. That's a good thing. But, Boston, Detroit, Miami, and Indiana probably aren't beating Cleveland in a series. So, to me, it looks like unless Toronto or maybe the Bulls figured things out, it's probably Cleveland's to lose at this point.
I tend to pay a lot of attention, Emil, to who wins on the road. It just gives me a clue as to who's really, really focused. And both Cleveland and Toronto share the same road record of 14-9 on this season. Over in the Western Conference, though, looking at this home thing, because we are projecting a potential playoff matchup, neither the Spurs or the Warriors have lost at home. And when you go into the playoffs, I'm going to assume that if all stays the same, the Warriors are going to be the team that is favored to win the series, and that squarely puts the pressure on a younger team. And when you're talking about trying to go into San Antonio and win under those circumstances, it could be a problem for the Golden State Warriors. It would suck for them to have this kind of regular season and not make it even to the final series.
Well, but by the end of the regular season, I suspect that San Antonio is not going to be far behind the regular season. I mean, right now, even after yesterday's game, Golden State sits at 41-4 and San Antonio's 38-7. So a lot's gotten lost with the season San Antonio's had because of the start that Golden State had. I mean, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I'm trying to look over that whole West now, too. The back half of that conference, there's nothing there that scares me if I'm either of those teams with Memphis, Dallas, Houston, or Sacramento. We talked about Oklahoma City yesterday, and the Clippers just don't seem right this year. They've had some injuries. I know Blake Griffin's been out. So unless somebody like Kevin Durant just goes off in a series, it should be Golden State and San Antonio pretty easily out there. Wouldn't you agree?
Sure. I mean, that's what everyone's expecting. so to speak. So, and either way, you know, the Spurs are somehow going to find their way into this thing. So, I don't think anyone's going out on a limb there. I'm trying to look back at the Chicago Bulls as a magical 72-10 season and trying to see, because I'm a bit amazed by how the, in a season where the Golden State Warriors are, in essence, challenging that, you know, all-time great season by the Chicago Bulls, the Spurs are kind of in position to challenge that as well. So I'm looking at that season that the Bulls had to see if there was anyone close like what Golden State is experiencing, and I'm looking at the next best thing.
I'm going to say something that's, when you're doing that, that's kind of blasphemous, but I think both those two teams, Golden State and San Antonio, are better teams than that Bulls team. And what I mean by that is, we've talked about the effect one player has in basketball. I think that Bulls team was a collection of very good players, role players, guys who knew what to do with an excellent coach in Phil Jackson. And they had the best player on the planet, and probably the best player that's ever played in Michael Jordan. So in a playoff series, he was able to, a lot of times, take over at certain points and advance them. And, of course, they had the 72-10 season. But, I mean, I've seen Golden State play a couple times this year. And, again, I don't sit there watching 10 basketball games a week. So, believe me, I don't fancy myself an expert on this. But from what I see, I think they're a more complete team than that Bulls team.
Perhaps they are. You know, I thought the Bulls did really well with their role players. Everyone understood their roles. So I guess history will let us know on that. But looking back on the 95-96 season, the one in which the Bulls went 72-10, the next closest thing was Seattle in the West. And, you know, they had divisions back then, but Seattle was a 64-18 team. A pretty damn good basketball team. But they were 64-18 on the season. Who knows if Golden State and...
Well, wait, that Seattle team, that was Gary Payton, right? He was on that team. And that was Sean, I spread my seed everywhere, Kemp, was on that team, correct?
Yes, if you must characterize it that way, of course, yes.
Well, Sean, I mean, that was a damn good team, actually. That was a very good Seattle team.
Yeah. And, you know, the series went to six games that year. So for all of their greatness, the Bulls didn't actually, you know, they didn't go out there and sweep Seattle. They had to go six games to get the win, and there were some pretty good battles in some of those games.
Go back to the Bulls championship runs and think of how many times you sat there watching them in the fourth quarter where Jordan would go off and save their bacon. I mean, He knocked was it Brian Russell or Byron Russell? He knocked him into the first row in that game six against Utah to win that game when he did the crossover, pushed off with his offhand and hit the jumper. Remember that?
He did get a full ass grab and push Brian Russell, who, by the way, was at Long Beach State while I was there and was a pretty damn good basketball player there in his own right. So it's something, you know, when I've come across him over the years, always reminded him that, man, you couldn't get a foul on that. I guess you weren't that great of a player that you could get that call. Doesn't really like that when I bring it up to him, but it was Michael Jordan. Nevertheless, man, we need to take our break. Warren Sapp is due to join us here on the Gridiron Stud Show, and we can't wait to talk to him about the various things that went down on Sunday between those two games. Stay with us. We'll be right back on the Gridiron Stud Show right after this. That doesn't mean everyone's putting their t-shirts away. Whether it's the company recreational basketball team, the youth soccer league for the kids, or the Halloween party your buddy throws every year, t-shirts are as much a part of the American culture as Tom Brady deflating footballs. Screen-printed t-shirts are costly when done for small groups. They're limited in color unless you want to pay even higher prices. More colors, more costly. The answer? Do it yourself at home with your inkjet printer and a hand iron. Whether it's your 7-on-7 team, your child's birthday party, or the family reunion, you can do it yourself and they'll look great. That's right, with heat transfer paper sold at tshirtsupplies.com, you can design your own logos, do the wording, whatever you want, print it on your own inkjet paper sold by tshirtsupplies.com, and iron it on with your own hand iron. The design or pictures you put onto your t-shirts are limited only by your own imagination and creativity. If you dream it up and design it, the paper sole at tshirtsupplies.com can get it onto your t-shirt. By the way, don't worry if you haven't done it before. As T-Shirt Supplies has first-rate customer service, they'll help you get the right paper for your project and steer you in the right direction. Visit them at tshirtsupplies.com. That's t-shirt, no hyphen, supplies plural, all one word, .com. Or call them at 1-877-857-2737. It's 1-857-85-PAPER. T-shirtsupplies.com. Go there now. To all you high school recruits out there, you want to get recruited by the colleges? Step up and visit GridironStuds.com today. We got college coaches visiting. We've got people visiting. We've got fans visiting. If you want to be seen, get your video up there right now. It's easy. Create a profile. Takes 2 minutes. Stop playing games. Get off of Facebook. Take control of your future. GridironStuds.com is where you need to be today. Visit now. Set your profile up and let yourself be seen. Tuesday edition of the Gridiron Stud Show. And as always, on Tuesday, we welcome... how many shows out there can say, Emil, that they have a Hall of Famer doing a segment every week? How many? How many out there? That's right.
Not many.
None, outside of this one. And that is us here on the Gridiron Stud Show. And as always, we're happy to have our next guest on. It's Hall of Famer, Gold Jacket wearer, Warren Sapp, joining us here on the Gridiron Stud Show. Sapp, what's going on?
Good morning, fellas.
Yes, we are in
the house. Are you today, Warren? Are you on the road? Are you home? Where are you?
I'm in the great state of Florida.
Excellent.
That is home.
We have been experiencing some chilly temperatures here in the great state of Florida. And I'm not talking
We good this morning. I woke up and I just ran to the store real quick to grab me some orange juice because on this date, 13 years ago, me and my compadres in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers woke up with one purpose, and that was to bring the Lombardi Trophy back to Tampa, Florida. And that was the day. So I wouldn't get me some champagne, you know, open champagne, drink me a little mimosa this morning. So I ran downstairs, and I just had shorts in my tank, and my little, you know, buzzer beater on. And I had all legs and arms out, and I'm like, oh, my God, I'm out to run in the store. It's going to be freezing. And then it was nice and warm. I'm like, I love Florida.
Listen to you. Listen to you two. Wait, let me chat. Let me tell Sapp what happened here.
Amos, by the way, so he's probably shooting you a bird.
Yeah, listen, Warren. We had where I live on Saturday, we just missed
it. No. Where do you live?
I live up in the Scranton-Wilkes-Barre area, so I was a little bit north of the big storm. Okay.
You a millimeter off the record.
Yeah, we got 4 inches of powdery white stuff. 1 hour to myself, they got 32 inches of snow.
That thing was real.
That was real.
I was watching it. And I was feeling it for you.
That's the type of weather the Tampa Bay Bucks couldn't win in, Emil.
What did you say about the Bucks not winning it?
Silence on the line. I said, that's that kind of weather the Bucks couldn't win in the playoffs. Isn't that what used to happen?
I think Chad's a little mistaken because he's forgetting who closed the Veterans Stadium. And I don't think it was warm at all.
That's right, Chad. They came up here and shut that down.
I closed the Vet and opened the Link with a shutout. So please, Chad, whatever temperature you want to play in, just give me 10 other compadres that are gonna stand with me and say not today. That's all I need. And that was that day. That was on January 19th. That was on January 19th.
13 years ago. Hey, Sapp, real quick, I played on that Veterans Stadium. You obviously played on it more than me. Just talk a little bit about what it was to play on that surface. I mean, I always heard all the stories. Then I went and played on it and said, how do you do this to people?
No. I got to tell you something. My first game in the National Football League was in Veterans Stadium.
Good Lord.
And you know what they did? No, I got to tell you. I got to give the people, whoever it is, some credit, because that afternoon, they rolled a brand new carpet out. I mean, it was no ridges, no cut. Well, they rolled it right over the top of it, so you didn't have to worry about, you know, when Billick was out there that day, my team's not playing on this in the preseason game and all that.
Right.
I mean, the vet was something else, but I got to tell you something. My second game was in Cleveland Municipal Stadium.
And how was that?
Well, that was a dump, wasn't it?
What? You talking about a locker room the size of my living room. I mean, we were all on top of each other, cold water, walk through the dugout and come up out of there right on the clay. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I heard that was horrible, that stadium.
Listen, I got to tell you two something. My first year in the National Football League, I played in the Vet, the Cleveland Municipal Stadium, the Superdome, the Pontiac Silverdome.
Oh, man.
The Hubert H. Humphrey Metrodome. All these places are gone. They don't even exist anymore.
You hit them all. You did a tour.
I did 31 of 32 stadiums in my 13 years. I did 31 of 32 stadiums in the National Football League. It was only one place I didn't stomp and rumble, and that was in Buffalo, Ralph Wilson, the great Ralph Wilson Stadium.
You never played there, huh?
You want to hear something? I looked at the schedule in week one, the year after, if I don't retire, the first game is in Buffalo.
Oh man.
There you go.
You could have hit them all.
I didn't get 100 sacks, and I didn't get them all, so I understand. It happens.
Hey, quick question for you, Sap, before Chad wants to hit you up with a couple recruiting questions, but a quick question. Going to this is Super Bowl week or 2 weeks, how nervous were you? Like, be honest, leading up to the game, were you nervous?
No, because, you know, we were the last team that went straight from the championship game to Super Bowl week. We won in Philly, came back to Tampa, had a party, got drunk, jumped on a plane the next morning, took off. We were in San Diego Monday afternoon.
Really? Oh, that's right.
Team.
That was 1 week.
Yeah, we were the last team. Yeah.
I'll tell you a funny story. You guys, I think, weren't you guys about 2 touchdown underdogs in that game?
I think it was 3.5 or something like that. Because Kiffin used to always yell it in the front of me. I can't believe they wait, 10-4 points, bro. Who do they think they are? I'm like, what is he talking about? I'm like, Money, we don't get those points on the scoreboard, so let's not talk about it. But he'd always, yeah.
Well,
He'd always play the underdog call. I'm like, no, we don't care. Everybody thinks we got a bad offense, and we understand. It's fine.
I remember when you guys got to that game, because obviously as a Cowboy fan, I so wanted you to beat the Eagles. You got to the game, and I was working at the time. I was the CFO of a company. I had to drive about an hour each way. It was up in the Poconos, Pennsylvania, and I would listen to the Mike and the Mad Dog, Francesa and Mad Dog. I would get that station. And I remember leading up to that game, you know how Mad Dog gets excited. They don't have a chance, the Buccaneers. Did you see the Raiders? I mean, I don't know I forget how bad they won the AFC Championship game.
Oh,
but
they cooked somebody
he,
like 51 to something, or yeah, something, 40-something to something. Yeah, it was bad. They cooked them. They
as
had
soon
it
as he said that, I knew that I was going to wager on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to win the Super Bowl, because I said, this guy thinks like the public. He doesn't realize they're going to play some defense. And you guys were good to me that Super Bowl.
Hey, man, I try to be good to anybody on any given Sunday afternoon. I was just going to give you your money's worth. That was my rule.
Well, you gave me mine and then some, so thank you.
Hey, that's all I need, baby. That's all I need. It was, you know, and people always, you know, want to hit us up and talk about, oh, y'all knew the plays. I'm like, okay, I just want the world to think about this and just your own personal life. Just say you're one of 12 kids. And you and all your siblings went into a business together. And y'all say y'all coach football. And y'all coaching a football team. And y'all sitting there and y'all banging and y'all going. Y'all go to championship game, the Tuck rule gets you. Come back the next time, Baltimore, Big Sarah Grusa grabs your quarterback and slams him on his shoulder. That gets you. So the next year, one of your brothers, you know, has a dispute with ownership. And he gets sent away. So now there's 11 versus 1. Who knows more about who? That 11 know about that 1 or that 1 about that 11? It ain't even close. That 11 about the 1, right?
Right.
Oh, okay.
That's how
so they should have the advantage, right?
Yeah, you.
Nah. They didn't have Simeon Rice, me, Derek Brooks, John Lynch, Rondé Barber, Brian Kelly, Dwight Smith.
Or right.
The MVP of the Super Bowl, Dexter Dirt Road Jackson. So don't play no games. I mean, and being my man Greg Spires and Chuck Darby and Chilton Quarles and Al Singleton. I mean, we were standing that day like, whatever you got, we got an answer for it. We're gonna defend every blade of grass on this raggedy
Well, but Warren, you know, you're saying something that, you know, Chad and I talk about this all the time with just generally football fans. They tend to gravitate towards offense. So, you know, when you put up a lot of points, the general public thinks you can't lose.
It's interesting. Because they're playing fantasy. And if they playing fantasy, they want points. And if you're doing points, I'm rolling with you. Got it. We play ugly football. We played an NFC Championship game where it was 17 points scored total. 17
right.
total.
No, I understand,
hey,
and that's
nobody,
that, that's
nobody
why
likes
the public
that kind of game except somebody like me and Chad and the rest of the defenders in the world. You know, we love that kind of game. We were defending every piece of carpet that was in the TWA Dome that day. Yes, sir.
Yeah, that's true,
exactly.
Man.
You hit it right on the head. People are married to their fantasy teams. And
that's
so people who score points and rack up yardage and touchdowns for their particular players are going to be the darlings for those.
Hey,
I
would have loved a 30-point offense a week. I would have loved one. I'd have three championships right now.
Well, this is a good question.
I'd have three championships right now, but I did. I had a 16-point offense, so I had holding the 14.
But you know what? I want you to think about something, and I know you're going to poo-poo me when I tell you this.
Why?
It might have changed the way you play defense. Because, see, the fact that you guys had to play defense the way you did probably made you a little bit better.
No. Even when we were in the playoffs, because if you go back to the playoffs, we were scoring 31 points in that divisional. We scored 27 points in Philadelphia. We scored 27 on offense, and we scored 21 on defense. So whatever it was, you know.
How much of that was set up by the defense?
No. All our points on defense, we weren't setting them up. We were taking them to the house in the Super Bowl. I mean, we were taking them all to the house. Dwight took two to the house, and Brooks took the other one to the house. I mean.
I still see Brooks with that lean forward run with the ball in his hand all the way to the end zone. But
man,
I gotta
lean forward. When you got booty like that, you gotta lean forward. That's the only way you get going.
I want to ask you this question, though. Would you have been okay with playing on a team that had a hurry-up offense on the other side?
Listen, just score.
You'd have been
I had an offense that was going 3 yards in a cloud of dust and punting. What are you talking about? Now you're going to speed it up and punt? No. Don't do that. If you're going to speed it up, you have to have an advantage. You have to have something that you're going to. That's why Tom Brady and that's why Peyton Manning and Boomer Esiason and all the people that ran that kind of offense, you know, they had an advantage and they went to it and they put up numbers. That's why you do it. But if you don't have an advantage, you gotta run this clock and play field position and defense. Play defense. Hey, listen.
But we always feel, Chad and I always talk about the fact that, you know, like, give you an example, Chip Kelly, his defenses in Philly were facing about 2 games extra worth of plays a year. If you go look at the amount of plays they faced each season, they were basically facing an extra 120 plays a year from your average team, which is about 2 games worth of plays. We always feel that eventually that takes its toll on the defense, both in terms of injury.
It takes your toll on the amount of times that they can show you something and fool you or try to fool you. It's the amount of opportunities and plays, because that's why in any football setting we talk about third down, because that's 3 less plays for them and 3 more for your offense. It's the amount of opportunities and chances you get. That's it. And if you're telling me Chip Kelly put his defense out there 120 more times, oh, my goodness, are you kidding me? That's 2 more games.
Yes,
right.
Exactly.
That's 2 more games. So they were playing an 18-game season with Chip.
Yes,
right. How does that feel at the end of the year?
And then here was the coup de grace that really killed Chip with his offense. They would get in the red zone and in crucial situations couldn't score points, and then time management was doo-doo. I mean, when they ran that ball down there and you wouldn't go to the two-minute warning and you had to leave, you're like, what are you doing?
Right. Right. Exactly. I can't wait to see this offense in San Francisco, Sap. I don't know about you.
Hey, I'm going to tell you like this here, son. He's got a nice toy to play with.
He does. I'm not buying it, though. Sorry.
You're not buying what? That Colin Kaepernick can light this league up? You're crazy. You're crazy.
No, Kaepernick's going to get him hurt.
No, because he's smart enough to slide. You just got to use the rules that they give you.
Man, Seth.
Tell me one time you've seen him get hit. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a different offense.
No.
He's a different quarterback. You play defense, you already know what you'd be doing to Kaepernick if they tried that in the league.
I'm not talking about the defenses he faced. It's the quarterback in which you face as a defense. If he won't allow you to hit him by throwing the ball and sliding, you can't do anything except foul him. Chad, you understand what I'm saying?
I'm looking at it like this.
Name me one time, because he was in games with Julius Peppers and Clay Matthews, and Clay Matthews wasn't even on the – and A.J. Hawk. All of them was in that game when he ran for 180 yards. You kidding me?
True. I do know this.
He didn't touch that kid.
He ran all the way through the playoffs
and took him to championship games and Super Bowls. Nobody hit him. Ray Lewis didn't hit him. Haloti Ngata didn't hit him. Suggs didn't hit him. Ed Reed didn't hit him. What are you talking about?
Listen, I'm looking at it like this. Quarterback sweeps and Jim Harbaugh.
Listen, this boy played all those defenses when he was running to those championships, and none of them, Chad, just name me one time he got hit. That's all. You watch enough tape. Think about it.
Different offense.
Oh. Chip Kelly ain't that foolish to get fired after getting the whole cake, batter, groceries, and everything. Now you shipped all the way back across the other side of the country, and now you're going to do what? Get the one piece, the Ferrari, you're going to get that knocked out? Oh, come on, Chad. Come on, man. The man ain't that crazy.
2019 Chip Kelly will be back in college football. That's just my prediction.
That's 3 years from now. You can win a world championship in 3 years.
Yeah, they don't have long. It's the San Francisco 49ers. They just had like a what do you call that? That they had a head coach this year.
Oh, don't even get me on that one.
Yeah.
Oof.
Ron Jeremy.
I want to get that team back to DeBartolo.
Please, immediately. Hey, before we launch into talks on the games we had this weekend, I just want to ask you, because I have a big recruiting audience, so I just wanted to throw some things at you. What team offered you your first scholarship?
Bobby Williams then. Bobby Williams was the recruiting coordinator, the special teams assistant head coach at Alabama right now. He was underneath the big guy in Michigan State. I took my first visit up there to see snow because I had never seen snow before as an 18-year-old kid from Plymouth, Florida. So I flew up to Michigan State, and he looked at me and said, son, if you want to play football in Michigan State, you have a scholarship here. And I'm like, then he was like, now I got to get that jacket. I'm like, oh, come on. He's like, there's no way you go home with this jacket unless you sign the national letter of intent. And then you can go home with that jacket. That's what he hit me with. I said, now I got to go take a couple more visits before I do this. I said, I'm going to take this off in this airport. Here you go, baby. Here's your gloves, too, and your hat. He said, no, you can keep the hat. You keep the beanie. I ain't going to pull it off your head. I said, oh, thanks, coach. We got on the plane and we're home, man. The Michigan State, then I went to Florida. And Spurrier took me to his office, and Shane Matthews walked in his office while we were watching tape. He said, I'll throw you 6 balls a game. You might have to make a play on one. I said, where do I sign?
Hey, so let me ask you this. Spurrier told me, hold on.
We got to go get your mom. My mom stopped me from signing at Florida. I won't tell that story. It's a bad story.
So that was the closest you got to not going to Miami. Was Florida was your number two?
I mean, it was just like the visits that were going now. And then I had to, and then when I went to my visit in Miami, Leon Searcy, Kelvin Harris, and Rudy Baba. Rudy Baba took me to the office, and I remember waking up the next morning going, how do I convince my mother? And we went to dinner the next night, and Dr. Anna Price took my mother to the side, and she said, I guarantee you, I'm going to make sure he go to class. And she looked at my mom, and my mom looked at her and said, okay. She said, well, I can turn you over to her.
Yeah, and Dr. Price could connect.
So now, wait, you're from the north area,
Central
Florida,
Florida.
Right?
I'm from
Central Florida.
I'm from Apopka, Florida, the class 8A three times state champs. And they should be ranked number one right now in this great state of Florida. Should be coming up this season. You might need to come down and check a little Florida football, Emma, because I'm saying Florida to you, and you looking all cross-eyed because that big 33 stuff that y'all play up there, that's not football, son. Go ahead and ask your question now.
Oh, wow. He's even killing the big 33 game. Holy cow.
Kill it. Absolutely kill it. I don't know no big 33. I ain't seen nothing out of there in a long time. Name me one.
Listen, I'm smart enough to understand what states are play the best
good.
High school football.
There we go. All right, thank you.
Yeah, well, we did grab a couple of quarterbacks out of Amos State, so for that we'll forever be grateful.
Oh no, Jim Kelly, the man. Jim Kelly, the man. We love Jim.
And there was another guy that played a little pro football down there, Dan Marino.
Well, Danny boy is the exception to all rules. Trust me, I fly on the plane with him every summer to our summer home in Canton, and it's beautiful to sit with the monster. He is something special. Love Dan Marino. Come on, you know that.
And then we gave the NFL Joe Montana.
Who?
A few other guys like that.
Joe Montana?
Joe Montana.
All right, let me get back on my recruiting thing. All right, so you told us what sold Mom on Miami. What sold Warren Sapp on Miami?
Erickson. Dennis Erickson. Got on a plane, landed at MCO, which is Orlando International Airport. And I didn't think he was coming. I really didn't. I mean, any man that ain't coming up here to recruit no country boy from Plymouth, Florida. No, he did. Him and Greg Smith jumped in a Cadillac, STS. They had just came out. The new Cadillac jumped in that thing, and he said, how do I get to your house? I said, Coach, you get on 441 and go north and drive until you just, it's jet black dog all around you, and then all of a sudden you'll see a sign that flash, and it'll say girls, 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 or it'll say nude girls. I think that's what the sign said then, nude girls. I said, it's an old trucker stop. It's the last trucker stop before you go up through Lake County. He's like, what? I'm like, just trust me. You can't miss this because it's in a jet black. And once you pass that sign, make your next right and then a right again and then your first left. And my house is that bright yellow one right in front of your face.
Bright yellow one?
Yeah, we had those, you know, those little those tin shingles they used to put on houses outside where you didn't have to worry about your house, painting your house or anything?
Yeah.
Man, my mama got one of them. I'm like, oh, thank God. I ain't never got to paint no more wood.
They don't have those
yes.
up north, though.
It was in Central
they
Florida.
They don't have them up north.
What do you mean?
Well,
north?
Wait.
No,
I want to ask, a question here. Before all the internet and everything, how big, I mean, I know now today we know everything about every recruit. How big of a recruit were you in high school going into college? Like, were you
honorable
recruited by everybody?
All USA Today? I just named you the three Florida schools. I didn't tell you about my visit to Florida State, but it's three Florida schools in Michigan State and Mississippi State. My coach from high school went there to be their coach of something, and he tried to get me to go there. And I told him, I said, Coach, I just can't even step foot in the state of Mississippi. So,
times have changed, and they're getting folks to go there now. Somehow,
well,
some kind of way.
Dog. You know what?
Interesting.
No. The only thing I had heard of Mississippi before my coach had went to Mississippi State was Mississippi Burning and Hines Junior College and another one up there used to get a couple brothers and they never got out of there. I mean, they used to go there, you know, them JUCOs in Mississippi, and they never came out of there. Hines and another one, right? It was two big junior colleges up in Mississippi back in the day, right?
Yeah,
well,
true.
I don't remember. Mississippi is a whole different show, Warren, because Chad
really?
And I have our suspicions
really?
Of what's going on in Mississippi
really?
Because we can't figure out how they're getting everybody there.
Really?
Emil, I got to tell you this. That movie, Mississippi Burning, did more to hurt recruiting for Mississippi State and Ole Miss than probably anything else that's ever went down in this modern era. I mean,
no doubt. What about a time to kill?
Yeah, time to kill. Yeah. No doubt.
I mean, no one's sending their kid there around that time.
What about the flag itself? I remember when they had the big brouhaha about it, and then the kid was on the interview and he said, "What's the flag gonna do to me?"
I do remember that. I do indeed remember that.
I remember that so vividly because we were in college at the time, and he was standing there, and they were doing an interview. And he's like, "What a flag gonna do to me?" And I'm like, "You have no clue what that flag represented to so many others before you, brother. And if you won't stand there and say, take that out from in front of my face, if you're going to ask me to play at your university, then,
Well, that's the problem. I've always had the same problem with it that you're saying. I mean, number one, what it represents to a lot of people. And number two, you know, even if you're not black, to me it represents a traitor. So why do you want to fly that flag? You're an American. Fly the American flag.
Traitor is the word you
use?
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, they seceded from the country.
Oh, okay. Traitor.
So, and I know what it represents, what you're saying. So, I mean, I don't understand
what am I
why
saying?
They...
What am I saying?
Well, it represents a bad era of racism and a lot of other horrible things, so I get it. Is that what
you're
saying?
You sure you get it?
Well, then explain it to me.
Have you ever been pulled over while driving black? Have you ever been asked to leave a mall because you don't live here?
That would be impossible for me.
Oh, I'm sorry. Then you don't feel it. So please don't tell me when you feel it, when a race of people have been enslaved and oppressed longer than they've been free in this country. So please don't tell me what you feel or what I'm saying, because I will tell you what I'm saying if you just ask.
More along the lines of understanding that you would have a certain feeling towards that. So
right.
I get where he's coming
yeah,
from
think...
on that. Actual feeling of it, though, no. I think we get that. I want to turn our discussion to the actual games that went down on Sunday. We had the whole Peyton Manning versus Tom Brady whole deal. Going
hot
into the top,
Peyton Manning 17. Hot damn. It was a good one, too. It was a good one.
How do you
a
feel
great
about,
football game.
How do you feel about Peyton Manning prevailing in that matchup?
No, how do you feel about them firing the O-line coach like he was going to make Marcus Cannon hit a snap count or get off the ball? Huh?
Yeah, I already posted my thoughts on that. Like,
you know what?
On, man.
Chad, what happened to the good old-fashioned?
You decided to run the ball
no.
17
Chad,
times in a close game?
Please, Chad, what happened to the good old-fashioned back offset right outside the tackle and he chips him?
They don't do stuff like that anymore, the New England Patriots.
Oh, okay.
They did that early on in their dynasty. They don't do that anymore, though.
That's not allowed anymore?
No, they've replaced that with Edelman running a whip route.
I got that. But you still
Chad, I have a question for Sapp here on the game itself and you know what you and I brought up yesterday and what he thought about it. What did you think about that key situation? There's probably about 5.5, maybe 6 minutes left. They had all their timeouts left. They were down 8. And Belichick decided to go for it on 4th-and-1 with that little pass that New England likes to do rather than just take the points at that point.
Because you needed a touchdown. And even by kicking the field goal, you were just going to be down 5 and you were going to have to come back down and go through that same situation again and get a touchdown. So you already there. You need 1 yard. I agree with that call. I just don't agree with the play call by Josh McDaniels.
That's New England.
I mean, hell, there's no way for you to fake two screens with the rush that was coming. You could barely get out of a quick out. Good God. What were you thinking? I thought they were going to, you
New
know.
New England football, though.
Knuckle up. Hey, man, I understand, but they play situational football better than anybody else except Sunday. They got beat at their signature thing.
I don't know, Seth, when they were winning Super Bowls, the play call would have been hand the ball to Antoine Smith, hand the ball to Corey Dillon, we'll get a yard.
No, but you got to turn on the other side of the ball when they were grabbing Marshall Faulk out the backfield and preventing the timing of that greatest show on turf to go. Because when you talk about Warren Sapp, Derrick Brooks, John Lynch, and them, you know, grabbing the greatest show by the turf and choking it is one thing. But when you're talking about Teddy Bruschi and Ted Johnson and and Bobby Hamilton.
Well, but Zap, I think you're looking at that fourth and
play call for the New England Patriots in that situation in 2001 and 2004.
Hold on. Let's get back to Emil because I want to hear whatever the game right now. What do you think I'm thinking about? What now? Fourth and one.
I think you're looking at that fourth and one as you or maybe I would or Chad as a fourth and one. But with New England's offense, is fourth and one anymore any different than fourth and five? It's the same. They don't run the ball.
I get what you're saying, but you would agree with me that fourth and one is a lot easier to get than fourth and five. And fourth and one is a lot more conceptually, conceivable to say, let's go for it at this point, than kicking the damn ball and giving it back to Peyton Manning, who could drive it away, and you might not get it again because they ain't like they defense some monster. You see what I'm saying?
Listen, I hear everything you're saying except
listening.
For one
I
thing
love
at that point.
Tells you to listen.
No.
I
hear what you're saying as far as the situation. And if it was Peyton Manning of 2007, I would probably say, yeah, you got to go for it. But Denver showed no ability after the first drive in that game that they were going to eat up the last 6 minutes of that clock.
But you still put yourself in a position to where now you give them the ball and they could get two first downs, and you know that does eat clock, right? And
correct.
Now they punt it. Now they punt it, and now you got to drive it all the way back to that same situation you're at and now score a touchdown, and it's less time on the clock, and it's beating away at you. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand. So you're netting it out and saying
I agree with the call.
You would go, what would you have done?
Go for it.
Run it right up the middle? Would you just have said, listen, we're going to move you off the ball?
No, I would have spread it out and then, see if, the linebackers didn't step up in the A-gap like they did, put Tom in the shotgun position, like you finna go do it and then go up there and goose him because Tom is the best at quarterback sneak. But they,
yeah, he is.
But they showed it at the line, and that's why them linebackers never left the A-gap. So they should have went to we're going to spread you out and throw this thing and, get them all wide, and then everybody would look like, okay, now you got to check. You got to go cover these people. You just can't leave them out there.
That's right.
If
and then you would have had him run up and do the quarterback.
If I go to a five-wide set and Tom in the shotgun, there's no way both them linebackers standing in the A-gap, right?
No, they have to go out and cover somebody.
Exactly. So now I can run up to it and goose it. You see what I'm saying? And I just need a yard.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Okay.
Yeah.
I
don't like what Josh had as a play. I don't. He didn't have that kind of time.
Man, but Josh got the old line coach fired.
No, Cannon and 71. 71 come in the game as an extra tight end. Lord have mercy. That's the one Vaughn should have. Oh, my God. Ooh. Vaughn's a nice kid. Oof. I would have. Oof. Oof. Tom Brady. You. Oof. That's that one right there. That's the one right there where you just. Oh, his helmet hits the ground first.
Yeah. Yeah, very true. I mean, they were getting after him, Sam. Why were they able to get to Tom Brady like that? You're a pass rusher.
When you
specialist.
Play in a crowd like Denver, a place like Lambeau, a place like Giant Stadium, whenever they, they had them defenses, and you got 80,000 on top of it like that, dog, man, you looking at that ball, you looking at that quarterback, and he looking at you like, man, I ain't got no time to be sitting here jacking around with no hard count. I got to get this. It's almost always on one. It is almost always a whore.
No, but I'm talking
almost
overall.
Always. I'll bet you 75% of the snaps when you on a roll like that was on one, and he was coming.
No, I'm talking overall, Seth, in general, in the game. Tom Brady got hit more than, he normally does.
Listen, man, don't believe those hurry stats. Just the hits I'll go with. But that hurry thing, I mean, everything's a hurry.
So
some
forget
people,
the hurry.
That's marketing.
I mean,
everything's a hurry.
He was getting stoned and dropped on his rear end. He was feeling those hits.
Dude, I'm telling you, when it's on one, and I, man, Chad, you talking about the ultimate advantage is the snap count. Get off. They're going backwards.
Yeah, no, true. I get that. How do you slow that down?
And you got the guy that was fastest to 100 in DeMarcus Ware. And the reincarnation, God bless his soul, of Derek Thomas. I mean, boy, he just ain't mean his home team. He just ain't nasty. Well, if he was mean his home team, Tom might have not made it. Tom might have not made it to the game if he was nasty as Derek Thomas. Oh, Oh.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
They said that he got hit 20 times, 20 hits in that game. It was the most in an NFL game this season, and I think the most since 2007 or something I read, that a quarterback actually got hit.
Since I left the league, yeah, that's about when we was doing it, before 2007, yeah, we assaulted.
20 hits on him in that game.
Nice. He threw it, what, 52 times? What?
Something like that, yeah. He threw over 50, I think.
Nice ratio.
Yeah, well, I'm surprised he didn't get hurt.
Listen, these guys are Hall of Famers. We've been saying how great Bill Belichick was because he would take trash. He went to the Super Bowl with Russ Hochstein at guard. When I walked up to Russ Hochstein, Russ looked at me. I said, "Son, I don't even know how you're standing in front of me right now at the Super Bowl." He said, "I know, Warren." I watched this kid come out of Nebraska. He was on my team. I tried to help Russ. I said, "Russ, sit back." And then the man running to you, grab him, sling him to the ground, jump back, you know, make a person go through you. Don't let him just juke you and go around. Oh, man, it was easy. Russ Hochstein, that was called a plus-minus in one-on-one. Plus-minus.
It was Brady and it was Manning. We did ask this question before you came on, Sap. Do you think this is the end for Peyton Manning, win or lose in this Super Bowl?
Please. Yes, it has to be. Because did you see his face after that week 17? He said, "You know, when I didn't get many reps this week."
Yeah.
That was classic right there, because when you talk about being the king of the hill and all of a sudden you're back up and nobody cares, we play the most humbling game on earth. And you saw a humble man, and he will really enjoy himself and go to the Super Bowl, and this will be wonderful. And he'll ride off in the sunset because it's a wonderful story, win or lose. It's a wonderful story.
And he really saved Kubiak. We were saying before you came on the air that whole Week 17 thing where he came in and basically
– That's how they got to the Super Bowl, because if they got to go to New England, no way they win. No way.
Right. Right. So he basically saved Kubiak a very uncomfortable situation, because had – Osweiler played well in Week 17, and they went into the playoffs, you know, winning that game convincingly. He's got Peyton Manning standing on the bench in the playoffs.
And not caring about him.
Yes.
That's the key, and not caring about him. I mean, he's an afterthought. Afterthought.
Yeah, no doubt about
that. The greatest
quarterback
to ever take a snap was about to be an afterthought, and now he's standing in the Super Bowl about to go head-to-head with Superman. I love it. What a story.
It is
a great story. Lopsided, Sap, 49-15. Did you envision a scenario where that could happen?
If you give the damn ball away like Seattle and Arizona did, you can't turn the ball over in an NFL playoff game and expect to win, especially on the road. Are you kidding me? It's a joke.
Yeah, no doubt about it. But
it's a joke.
I tend to believe Carolina's defense doesn't get it's just due in terms of credit. Do you agree or disagree with that?
I disagree. Because that's the same defense that was up 35-7, and then it was 35-35. That's the same defense that was up 31-0, and it came out to be 24-31. So what just do are they I mean, oh, we're a great starting team. Whenever a team fumbling and giving it away, we'll build a lead. But when they going up and down the football field, it's real hard for us to turn it off. Come on, man. Give me a break with that defense.
But let's just look at what they've done in terms of turnovers over the last two games. These are playoff games.
When you're giving the ball away in a NFL game, no matter where it's at, if you're giving away downhill on Biscayne Boulevard, you're going to lose the game. It don't matter. Turnovers is the worst. It's
so giveaways or takeaways?
Come on.
Giveaways or takeaways? It's a legit question.
You can call it whatever you want. They do say giveaway, takeaway. It is a slash in between, right? Giveaway, takeaway?
Sure.
Yeah, plus, minus. Yeah, I got it. I know what it is,
hey,
Chad.
Listen, I've got my own on that. You know, there's some times when it is
Who are you a fan of that didn't get credit on that? Luke Kuechly is the greatest linebacker we've seen since Dick Butkus.
Well, but it sounds like you're saying that they don't have anything to do with the takeaways. I mean, wouldn't you agree they at least, you know, they're causing them?
So you're telling me when Russell Wilson is in that pocket as a quarterback, they did anything but rush? Only thing he had to do was just eat the ball and take the sack, right?
What was the next one
in that game?
But you're taking two. You're just taking these specific
games.
These two games. You're using these two games. They led the league, didn't they, in takeaways this year, or something close to it?
Listen, brother. When the opposing team is committing turnovers, giving you the football, I expect you to win. But when the New York Giants wasn't turning it over, and they were coming at them up and down the field, I mean, how do you turn that off? When they don't turn the ball over to us, they can score. That's what that defense says to me.
That's how you're looking at it, huh?
Because I've had the lead in a football game where I had my foot on somebody's neck, and you don't take your foot off. That's what a great defense does. It continues the onslaught. Because that's all we know what to do. We are trained one way, to crush your neck.
Yeah, I get
crush
it.
Like,
I get
crush
it.
Them like bugs.
I get it.
Crush them like bugs. That's what I was taught, Chad. Crush them like bugs.
Yeah. So
yeah, you're saying they just don't, they don't put the other team away. I guess this, what I'm getting from you
no,
is
no, what I'm telling you, if the other team is not turning the football over, they're going to score, and we're going to have a back-and-forth game.
Yeah, all right, I get
that's
that.
That's what I'm saying to you.
I get that.
The reason
gotcha.
Why they have blowout
the
games is because the other team has given the ball away. All right, Carolina took it away, got the takeaway, because the other team is turning the ball over. Because this don't make no sense what Carson Palmer was doing. Are you kidding me?
Well, he got shell-shocked. That's a good point.
He was what?
He
I mean, from the first pass, when he threw it over Buddy Head, you went, what was that?
Well, you know, that's your one freebie you're going to get. But you saw that look in his eyes somewhere in the middle of that game.
No. I'm talking about, let's go back to the beginning of the game. The first pass, when he went back and Buddy was in there, and that's, I mean, I can make that throw.
I know, but, you know.
He just sailed that thing. Did he not? You know what I'm talking about, that first pass? He just, and you went. And last his jail looked like, huh?
I thought the worst kick he threw was the one in the end zone.
Oh, the one when he just stared Buddy down after they had a chance in his first and 10 and he goes for the kill.
Yeah,
I thought that
was horrible.
And he's not even, and 12 is not even, and Brown's not even open.
No, that
he's
was terrible.
Not, he's not even open. The DB, the back DB gonna make that play, let alone the safety. But Carson has always been this. Hey, Carson Palmer has always been this in the playoffs. He's only had
Let's
two
talk
games.
About the other quarterback cause now. That everyone is on the bandwagon got heavy overnight. What's to say about Cam Newton? Oh, you know what? I want to ask you this question. When Cam Newton was coming out, honestly speaking, hand on the Bible, Sap, what were your thoughts about Cam Newton's future in the NFL? What did you think he would be?
You know, I have tape on this at the NFL Network if you want to go get it. I told him, I said, listen, I told him, you can't tell me somebody this big, that strong, that fast is going to get to this league and all of a sudden because Mike Mayock was on this, oh, he's going to, you know, not work. I said, you know what? I was there with Jamarcus Russell. I was there. And Jamarcus Russell was the first pick in the draft and wasn't signed until the other 31 picks in the draft were signed before him. How does that happen? Because last time I checked in the National Football League, the number one pick sets the market. Al didn't want to pay that man. That man walked into that place in week 15. He didn't have a chance. And then had a coach that didn't want him in Lane Kiffin. I said, if that's what y'all going to give Cam Newton, then he doesn't have a shot. But if you're going to give him what you give any other quarterback that's drafted in the first round, a running back, a tight end, a wide receiver, a backup wide receiver, a slot guy, you know, all the damn pieces you get anywhere else, then the sky's the limit. But you can't tell me something. I say he's I call him the purple unicorn because he's special and unique. It ain't even close.
I want you to explain to Emil, because I've met Cam Newton on a couple occasions. Explain to him just how big that guy is.
Emil, have you ever seen Dante Culpepper?
I've never been next to him, but yes, I've seen him on TV and he's huge.
Like that, but in shape. And nothing against Pep, because Pep was a monster too. But, I mean, it was like another level. When I talked to him, I went, God.
That was my impression.
I'd love to
But you know what I always thought about Cam Newton coming out of college? I thought his throwing of the football was underrated. I mean, I always thought he threw a nice ball. I don't know why people are surprised that
because
he's doing it now.
It ain't the traditional drop back over the top throw. And you have to fit a certain bill for certain people to check off on you. Because
right.
Mike Mayock had two quarterbacks ahead of this man.
Who? That's what I'd like to know.
Oh, you got to go check my tweet. It's in there. I'll look it up for you.
You know what's a damning way of just realizing how big Cam Newton is? There was a game this year against Green Bay where he scored and needed the football back, and he had to get it from Julius Peppers, who is a huge human being. And Cam damn near was eye to eye with that guy and looked, you know, if they had their backs turned with the same uniform and number on, it would have been hard to tell the difference between those two.
He ain't that big, but he big. Because Julius Peppers is just a freak. Oh, good God Almighty.
Yeah,
I mean, his head alone is
someone that size. But Cam didn't look small.
Hey, Julius Peppers is the only human being that makes Peyton Manning's head look small.
Oh, boy.
Julius Peppers is a different human being. Oh, my goodness, that is a monster.
How tall is he? About 6'7"?
Peppers?
Yeah,
6'6". 6'6", 6'6", 6'6.5", something like that. Yeah, he's a monster. Ooh, bow-legged and
long arm.
Athletic and just hostile, mobile, too. Ooh, I love that boy. Ooh, oof. Him and Simeon Rice are my two favorite ends.
It's one of those things where he's real big, and he's the way he looks, you feel like even if I try to run away from this guy, he could catch me. That's scary big.
Yeah, oh, he definitely going to catch me.
Yeah. Now, I have this off-the-beat question for you. Have you seen that video of Mike Ditka pulling the wad out on NFL Countdown? Have you seen that?
A wad of tobacco?
Then I guess I need to tag you to this. I'm going to tag it to you right now. I found this absolutely hilarious. But
the man fall asleep on the set. So, I mean, what?
What's next? That.
At least he's awake.
I just tagged you to it. Check it out. All right,
hey,
man.
I love Dicker. Iron Mike, the old cowboy, the great 85 Bears, all that. But, boy, when you go to sleep on the set, I mean, it's tough, man.
he's reached up there. Well, listen, we're not going to have you on next week, but we are going to have you on in 2 weeks. And we're going to put your feet to the fire and ask you for a prediction on the Super Bowl. You be prepared for
that. I kind of figured that. I mean, you always got to have a prediction whenever you're talking about the game itself. I don't have a problem with that. And anymore, I want to hear your prediction and give me the line before I go with my prediction because I at least got to know what the better is thinking. How about that, Amo?
Okay, the line, at least
guy.
When I – let me check it right now.
Not now. I don't want to know the line. I don't want to know the line when I go in the lab. When I go in the lab, I just want to get in the lab. It's just about the facts and the trenches for me when I get in there. I don't want to think about no numbers or nothing nobody in Vegas thinking because they get information from the training room in places that they shouldn't get information, but they got one in every team. They got one on every team, so.
Gotcha.
Well, Sav, why don't we do this? Before we let you go, we'll do this in two parts. Since we've got 2 weeks before the Super Bowl, let's ask you a couple of questions of what the first week is like. Then when you come back for the week before the Super Bowl, we'll ask you what game week is like. So tell us, what's the biggest deal with the first week heading into the 2 weeks before the actual Super Bowl? At what point is the game plan put in?
Sorry. I have no clue. I told you, we're the last team to go straight from the NFC Championship game straight to the Super Bowl. We're the last one.
Now, without having something to
we didn't have that
bout.
You didn't get 2 weeks. You didn't get 2 weeks of sap. That would have been wonderful. Oh, my goodness. 2 weeks of sap.
So
you know what?
This
is the way I think I would do it if I, in my little 20 years of football NFL knowledge, let me give you what I would put together with the guys I know. I'd go almost like a half off week right here. You know, get your stuff together, get all the tickets, get all that out of the way because I know that's the worst. Tickets, hotels, family, travel is done this week right here. We're going to do that right now. We're going to get everything out of the way. So when you walk in here on Wednesday, I give you 2 days. I give you Monday and Tuesday. Wednesday you come in here, we going to work. Because, I mean, I got to get all the travel and everything, and we'll help you, and we'll get all the secretaries, you know, everybody get the name, spelling, date of birth, everybody that's traveling, where they going to be staying. We get all the logistics out of the way. Once the logistics is out of the way, it's on to the game plan. Then we can go 10 days. It's like having, you know, like playing a Thursday night game. You got 10 days to go at somebody, and then you go. So I'd go that route. You got to get all the logistics out of the way. I put a picture up on Instagram the other day where I had like 50 tickets on my bed. My dude hit me back and was like, man, I remember that day, man. I walked in the room and you handed me my tickets. I'm like, yeah, it's crazy.
Wow.
It's mad.
Wow,
it's mad.
Crazy. You know,
it's mad.
I'm
you got to make sure, you gotta make sure the baby's mom, grandma, auntie, everybody fly out. Everybody got the right room. Make sure they ain't got the wrong roommate or a king bed, and there's two of them in there, and they looking like, I'm supposed to sleep with him. No, you're supposed to have a double bed. Ask for a double, nuts.
I can only imagine. Well, listen, Chad,
you know this, Chad. When you got country folks that ain't never been nowhere, you fly all the way to California. Whatever room they get, they going to make it work. Maybe we ain't never had that. We going to make this work.
Sure. You know, you're talking about people who have slept in a bathtub before and it wasn't even in a hotel. I get
that,
it.
That's not an issue. That's not an issue.
All right. Well, look, as I was saying, I'm an idiot, so that's why I have Emil here to prevent me from being a complete idiot. If you're not on next week, you're not on right before the game. So I got to put you on the seat right now. I got to put you on the hot seat right now since you're not on next week. Who's winning this
game? All right, Emil, give me the line. Talk to me.
Right now we have Carolina as a 4.5-point favorite. 4.5, Carolina favored.
I love Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware, and I know the blind side can't block either one of them, so they're going to have to come up with a game plan, and I know Shula, he knows how to play that kind of game. So the rush will be neutralized with a combination of the purple unicorn just avoiding it, and just, I mean, they're not very – Von and D-Ware ain't very big, and this boy here is something else, and you just got to have a nasty disposition when you go at him. I'm going to go with Carolina. I'm going to go with the NFC.
Give us a score.
There you go, see?
28-24. Ooh.
28-24. So he's picking a thriller.
He would take the point. Okay.
Yeah, he's by a half, too. He's calling for all types of drama.
I didn't have anything to do with that gambling discussion y'all just had. I just told y'all a score. You asked me for a score. I gave you a score. Thank you. I'm done with whatever y'all talking about now. I cannot be associated with known gamblers.
We understand that.
I cannot be associated with known gamblers. Y'all play fantasy, right? All right, we fantasy players.
Okay, we understand.
For now, that's going to be okay. Yeah, for now, that's going to be okay.
What's wrong with y'all? Me and Paul Hornung sit side by side, you know, signing autographs one time. He gave me one of the greatest pictures I own of him and Vince Lombardi, and he wrote on it. He said, Coach would have loved to coach you. I mean, Paul Hornung is my man, but I don't want to join Paul Hornung in the gambling club. Y'all leave me alone, man. I ain't got nothing to do with y'all gambling, man. Y'all make money, do what y'all do on my off time, please. On my off time.
Oh, man, I feel like I'm on with Sapp's lawyer here. Okay, we got you. No
Thank
Pete
you.
Rose, no Paul Hornung.
Thank
we got you.
And I don't think they can take my bus out the hall, but I just don't do the gambling thing. Y'all go enjoy yourself, play your damn fan duel or whatever.
Oh, man.
I love y'all. I'm just letting you know, I don't do the gambling. I don't. I've never done it. It's silly to me. How could you bet your money in a $5 billion casino? They didn't build that for you to make money.
Of course not.
Hey, man, don't spoil it. Don't spoil it for them casino owners.
Really?
Yeah, you're letting.
Really?
What are you letting the secret out of the bag? You mean they didn't build that casino with winners? Oh, my God.
No, they didn't build it for winners. Yeah, that's why you
with
keep
winners,
doing it there. You call it the bookie. Good job.
Okay, so there we have it. Sapp is against the gambling thing, and he has the Carolina Panthers winning the Super Bowl.
Yes. 2 weeks out. You guys are unbelievable. One day, they ain't even got home and they went back to the facility and looked at the other team yet. They ain't even put a game plan in. Y'all done made me call out a score. I love y'all on the football.
But
I love y'all.
But you seen them, and that's all we needed to know. You saw him. That's all we need. So the next time we get you on, Sap, we're going to talk about what happened in that Super Bowl, man. Then we'll
In the lackluster Pro Bowl. I mean, is it just anybody get to go now?
That's pretty much how it works. If you call off the game, then somebody else gets to go, and they get to be called a Pro Bowler, too.
All right. I'm going to tell you two something that you two might not know. Do you know the first line of an NFL contract?
What?
No. What is it?
It says
what is
I.
It?
With a line, you have to put your name in there. If selected to the NFC, AFC Pro Bowl will participate. That is the first line of an NFL contract.
You're kidding
me.
That's the first line of an NFL contract. Somebody has got to come up with some surgeries or some medical excuses of why they're not going to these Pro Bowls, or somebody's going to get fined.
Well, nobody seems to want to go. Everybody has a reason not to go anymore. It seems like 20, 30 guys say they can't go.
We're finna see, because, I mean, the medical staff's about to be put on alert. I'm telling you, the league's not going to have this, because they can't sell the Pro Bowl then. You have no stars.
Well, I know
fewer
Derek
stars.
Carr
you
is
have
in the Pro Bowl.
Star, you have fewer stars. And then those stars are only going to play the first quarter. I already know. Once you've gone for three times in a row, oh, that's it. I'm one quarter. You Young Bucks, hey, boy, you ready over there? If you need a
ball,
I got
you.
If you need a ball, I got you. But I'm not playing. I'm not playing past halftime. So, I mean, whatever you need me to do in the first half to get you to halftime that you can finish this game, because I'm not playing in the second half. I'm telling you, and it turns into a uh-uh. That's why it looks like it looks.
Be honest here. Take off your NFL cap. But did you really not want – you didn't want to play in the Pro Bowl. Come on, did you? I mean, you wanted to be voted to it, but you didn't want to play, did you?
Oh, you're crazy. I wanted to get
really?
There and watch Deion. I wanted to get there and watch Deion Sanders lay his clothes out on the floor and make a miniature man on the floor so he can look like what he looked like. And he's sitting there dressing. It was the greatest thing ever. I wanted to sit there with Reggie White and Randall McDaniel. I mean John Randall and the rest of the crew that was there. What was that? Dennis Stubblefield and all the boys. I'm sitting there with all. I mean, Emmitt Smith's in the locker room. Are you kidding me?
Okay. I didn't know. I'm just asking you.
Are you kidding me? Brett Favre's in the locker room. We're there talking crazy. I mean, come on. Are you? It's like you're a kid in the candy store. It's the greats of the great, and you're in the same company. Are you kidding me? Of course I did. I would have got me some blue and white Jordans because, you know, all that stuff in Tampa was, you know, black and dark. You know, I got to get me some different color shoes on my feet. Got me some blue and white J's, you know. Get to see Peyton Manning, you know, checking my – I hadn't played Peyton at the time, you know, looking at all, you know, the different people and stuff. I mean, come on, man. Come on, man. Out there with Neil Smith. I mean, you get to walk up on the greats and they're going to say, what up, baby? And, you know, you get to – and you got a two-hour tab on the bar because Derek Thomas, God bless his soul, and Cortez Fat Kennedy wasn't playing that. So you had to give up a good bill. So you were sitting there for 2 hours till your bill was over, so everybody was going to come over and say hello to you. You met wives and coaches. And I mean, it's a real
– I was thinking of it
there?
More from
have
the –
Have you ever been there?
No, to Hawaii. I have not been to
Jesus.
Hawaii.
Wow. No, to the Pro Bowl.
No, I've never been to the Pro Bowl.
Jeez.
Never.
Trust me, if you ever got there and went to the Iolani in the back with Allen, that's the bartender's name. I mean, trust me, it's a whole lagoon in the back, your family. I mean, come on, dog. You get to sit there with Jerry Rice, his old lady, your old lady sitting there having dinner. I mean, come on, man. What are you talking about?
Wait, Sap, see, you're telling me the player experience, though.
Playing of the game.
What
about that?
That's what I meant.
Are we talking about the actual players who would be in my position, right?
No, they're
talking.
Did you want to play
on the field?
Yes, because that was a part of the thing. I mean, we woke up that morning, me and Derek, because me and Derek was, you know, we was transferring who drove every day. So this day we pull up, I was driving. And Emmitt Smith came out like he was late to work. He was, oh, man. What's up, Emmitt? Man, the bus gone? I said, yeah, dog, get in. You going to give me a ride? I mean, dog, do I want to play? Come on. At the end of it was about money because you wanted to cut down your bill because it was only like $25,000 and 12.5 to the one. I think it's bigger numbers now, but you were trying to cut this bill because, trust me, we were playing at the end of the game. Go back and look at those games at the end of the fourth quarter. You heard Troy Aikman on Sunday. It was an assault on quarterbacks at the Pro Bowl.
Yeah,
look up, trust me. Look up the MVPs of the Pro Bowl. It's like a bunch of defensive players. Trust me. I'm telling you, man, they used to assault the quarterback at the Pro Bowl. Boy, it was a fallout. Boy, I was there that day Kevin Cogan and Neil Smith got into the big fight.
Oh, I think I remember that whole thing.
Yeah,
that, he got in a fight
you,
with everybody.
You talking to an old dirty B. We used to fight and everything at the Pro Bowl. This was serious. It was over $12,500, dog. $12,500.
I don't know if that excites them today.
Listen, these are different kids because the guys I played with came out of the non-free agent era. You know, the Reggie White case was in what, 92?
92 or 93.
Yeah. So I got in the league in 95, went to my first Pro Bowl in 98. So you're talking about a span of five, 6 years right there. Them old heads are still there. You know, like the 12 name complaints in the Reggie White case, I played in the Pro Bowl with them.
right.
They don't play no games. I mean, Hardy Nickerson was my roommate my rookie year. Holy smokes.
I remember him.
I got the collective bargaining agreement slammed in front of me. Read that. I'm like, what is that? That's what you sitting underneath. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
What are you talking
man,
about?
Man.
You want to know something about this league, boy. So that's what made me, you know, like, okay, let me pay attention to what's going on. Because if it's affecting me, then I might want to at least have a say or send the right representative from my football team. So, you know, we never joke with the PA. You know, like most teams made it a joke, who was the PA rep and stuff and all that. No, we're not going to do that. Whoever represents us, we're going to pick out that guy that represents us and we're going to send him because we're not sending no clown. No.
And who represented you? Who represented you guys?
I forget.
It wasn't Rondé?
Rondé wasn't the lawyer. His brother was.
What about John Lynch? Wasn't John Lynch on your team?
Lynch was a hitter. You don't want a guy with that you know, got a little buzzed on
go in
there, Sunday and then Monday.
No.
But wait, he got through Stanford. He had to be a little bit smart.
Stop. Did you know Stanford would not flunk their athletes when John Lynch went to school?
I didn't know that.
It was called the Stanford D. That's why Stanford N with D. Yeah, that's it. No E in Stanford. You get a D.
Okay.
You get a D.
I got you.
We're getting a ton of nuggets from Mr. Warren Sapp here on the Garage Ted Show.
Hey, man, you know me, baby. If you go there, I'm going to give it to you. Because, I mean, you know, when you're in the mud with a man, you learn a lot about him. And we just shoot it straight. Hey, Lynch laughed about it.
Oh, man.
The Stanford DA, you heard about that, Sapp. I'm like, yeah, man. Why you didn't tell him I would have went to Stanford, too? That's why I look at Sherman like, really? Come on, stop it, Richard. give me an Ivy League. If you walk around like James Brown with a Harvard ring on, then I give you a little more love. I mean, you get the nod.
Hey, can we get a representative from Stanford to call into the show right now? I'm sure they were listening to this right now. They'd probably blow our
Please
lines.
Call in if you got the guts. What Condoleezza Rice?
You know what?
Get Condoleezza Rice on the
Sapp
line.
Just told me, what Sapp just told me just warmed my heart because the next time I get in an argument as a USC fan with a Stanford guy, I'm going to have to bring that up. You know, you don't fail your athletes, so don't give me that crap.
This was back in the day.
Man.
I don't know what they're doing
awesome
now. This was
USC
back in the day now.
You know,
we played at a different time. I mean, you
That's
went to the
true.
University of Spoiled Children?
I did not go there. I'm a USC fan. I went to a
oh,
Jesuit
you're a USC
university.
Fan. Oh, you're just a University of Spoiled Children fan. Oh, okay. You
yes, I went to a Jesuit university
grand.
That does not have a football team. So I'm allowed to pick.
Hey, well, Charles,
oh, yeah. No. You're allowed to be a fan of whoever you want. No problem.
Sure.
No problem. Because I was a Gator fan for a minute, and then I switched to Bobby Bowne because, you know, Sammy Smith went there from my high school, and he was like my sister. So, you know, I was a, you know, Florida State fan. You know, Herb Gainer and Deion Sanders, all that. You know, I loved all that. And then I was a Cane, and now I can't stand a Seminole. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, right.
And
that's
the
point
of
me.
Take over
fan,
the moon or something, you know?
Florida State fan ended up being a Cane. Now I got a problem with Seminole somehow, some kind of way.
I got a real problem with them. But at least they're players.
Right,
I got
man,
a real problem with Gators. I got a real issue with Gators, though.
Yeah, the next time we have you on, we'll be talking about this Super Bowl and how Carolina won it 28-24. Wouldn't that be
No. What do y'all think of Thomas Davis talking about he going to play with a broke forearm?
Hey, man, can you doubt that guy? He's been through everything else. Football.
Yeah, actually, I can on this one because Jack Youngblood had that was a hairline fracture. You know, I talked to Jack.
You did?
Jack said, that was a hairline fracture. So I said, oh, okay, Jack, okay. Yeah. It will hurt, but it wasn't.
It was on the Pelicans, and it's funny. Hey, it's funny. funny, Seth, that you bring that up, because I was talking to Emil and I were talking about the very first Super Bowls we can remember. And as a Los Angeles Rams fan, that's the first Super Bowl that I remember. And all they talked about during that game was he had a broken leg. No hairline fracture talk. Broken leg.
Yeah, just broke leg. Yeah. Because that's what I asked him when he was sitting there, and I got in the hall, so I figured I had the credentials now to ask him. I said, all right, Jack, give it to him on the broke leg. He said, I had a hairline fracture. I said, okay. I said, all right. So it was just like a nasty, nasty shin splint just running up here. He said, oh, yeah, but I had some good pills. I said, all right, there it is.
Different era, too, man.
I know what that's like. I played the games like that with you know, the 34 mil of copper broke, you know what I'm saying? Still broken. It was on the men, and that thing, boy, whenever you hit something, it just sends send a shock through your body. You're like, ugh. But boy, you get that, you know, get a couple little shots here, there, then you hit it, it's just a, you're like, okay, it's just like a regular little pain. Then you hit it again, then you don't feel that one. Then the second quarter, then you're like, okay, I'm ready. Then the fourth quarter, when that game goes zero, you go, Lord, what did I do?
Yes, I know.
When the medication wears off, I'm sure it doesn't feel too
sweet. I'm telling you, after the game goes zero, and that adrenaline goes away, because now you got the feeling of winning and loss, and now it's high. And then you go, oh, Lord, what did I do? My head goes shaking.
my son played in his Citrus Bowl with a sports hernia, and obviously you can't play with that unless you get some kind of pills. Played, and when that game was over, the mother of all pain in that man region came in on him.
So, what? There is no mercy for what you've done to yourself when that actual pain hits you. Holy smokes, boy. Unbelievable. But you can't do that with a forearm. I mean, how is he supposed to swing and tackle and hit? What?
Yeah.
Well,
first time he tackles somebody, he's going to be in excruciating pain.
Last time I tried, it was rip, wrap, and grab cloth. And once he rip and wrap, ain't no grabbing. I mean, everything going to go.
The last thing I want to do
to my football team on the world's biggest stage is handicap him.
Yeah, true. But if he does play a full 60 minutes and plays well in that game, you're going to have a bunch of people wanting to find out what the hell he took and want some of that. No doubt about that.
Chad, I've been in the NFL locker room. There's four things on the counter in the NFL locker room now. And you know what that is?
Lay it on us.
Tylenol, Aleve, Advil, and Bear.
Yeah?
Don't they use that one Toradol or whatever it's called?
Nope. If you need a Toradol shot, you have to go to your trainer on Thursday. Tell him you want one. He fill you a prescription on Friday, hands it to you. You go to the pharmacy, go get it, and you have to put it in your carrying case and bring it to the stadium or on your bag and tote it on the road with you and bring it to the stadium.
That's for liability, right? Because they don't want to be the ones who gave. They don't want to be the ones that prescribe it, right?
No. We had to change the culture because there was always a bag man. When we got on the plane after the game, the bag man would walk down the aisle and you get what you need.
Wow.
So when the DEA shows up and raids everybody's stuff, you know, you're like, we got to get rid of the bag man. No problem.
Right. Okay.
Ain't no more Dr. Feelgood on the planes or in the locker room. Except Bear, Aleve, aspirin, and Tylenol.
I recommend Aleve. It works for my knees very well.
Aleve does. Aleve is good for 12 hours.
Yeah, I like Aleve.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Yeah, but when you get into 60 car accidents every Sunday afternoon, Aleve.
I'm talking for me, not for you. It's not going to help you.
We're not talking about me or you. We talk about the NFL.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, that ain't going to do no good.
Yeah.
Trust me.
No.
Two Tylenols don't do that. That's why the NFL locker room has become the Roach Motel. When most of them go in there on a Sunday afternoon, they don't check out. They check in. They don't check out. Because ain't nothing in there for them except ice and aspirin.
We're leaving it there, man. We'll check you after the Super Bowl on 2 weeks from now.
Appreciate
you being on and dropping all the nuggets for us, man. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Sapp.
All right, that was Warren Sapp. 100 miles an hour with that guy. Still. All right, well, listen, that's the end of our show. Man, we covered a lot of ground with Sapp today, didn't we?
Oh, we were all over the map with them.
Yeah, we were all over the map. But again, we appreciate you coming on and joining us. We want to thank y'all for listening. Programming announcement, the Recruiting Roundtable show will be on tomorrow night at 8 p.m. You don't want to miss it. You definitely don't want to miss it. We're right up against signing day, so you want to join in for that. A lot of news to spread. So thank you for listening. For Emil Calamino, I'm Chad Wilson. Enjoy the rest of your day. See you tomorrow night for the Recruiting Roundtable. No safety, no safety.